If you're running a business right now, you're playing a game where the rules keep changing. Trade tensions, economic uncertainty, culture wars, the world is rapidly changing around us. And companies, especially independent and local businesses, are having to adapt faster than ever. That's why Mission Critical is evolving. We're diving deep with the founders, CEOs, and entrepreneurs who are navigating this chaos in real time. The ones making the tough calls, pushing through unpredictability, and proving that resilience isn't just a buzzword, it's a survival skill. How do you scale in an economy that feels like it's on shaky ground? What happens when US policy shifts send shockwaves through Canadian industries? And in a world where diversity, healthcare, and economic resilience are becoming battlegrounds, how do businesses double down instead of backing down? These are the real conversations that matter to business leaders right now. I'm Lance Chung, and this is Mission Critical. Let's get into it. Today on Mission Critical, we're diving into the world of scent, storytelling, and scrappy entrepreneurship with the founders of one of the most compelling indie fragrance brands in the game, DS & Durga. Now, you might recognize their minimal, eye-catching bottles on the shelves of your favorite department store or boutique. We're talking matte black caps, clean serif fonts, and labels that read like the start of a short story. The aesthetic is as intentional as the scent inside. Timeless, restrained, and just bold enough to stand out without ever shouting. Founded by musician-turned-perfumer David Maltz and architect-turned-creative director Kavi Maltz, DS & Durga began in a Brooklyn apartment with hand-labeled bottles and a whole lot of DIY spirit. They didn't have industry connections, a business plan, or even a clear idea of what a brand really was. What they did have was vision, taste, and an unwavering belief in their ability to build a world around scent. In this episode, the husband and wife duo shared the unconventional path they took to scale their indie fragrance house into a globally recognized label. We talk about the myth of overnight success, building slowly and intentionally, and what it means to stay creatively independent in a commercial world, and why sometimes the best business decision is the one that feels right. If you're building something from scratch or wondering how to stay true to your vision while scaling, this one's for you. This is Mission Critical. Let's get into it.
Hello, how are you today?
Doing well.
We're doing really well. Thank you. How are you, Lance?
Great. I'm so excited to be chatting with you today. I know that you were in Toronto. Was it this week or last week? I don't know. Time means nothing to me these days. But I'm so sorry I missed you, and I would love to have met you in person. But I'm so glad that we were able to chat today and talk about your incredible journey and your incredible brand. I'm so excited. How is everything going? Where are you calling in from today, Brooklyn?
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah, we're in our studio in Brooklyn, in the Brooklyn Navy Yard, where the magic happens, as you can see behind David.
Yes, exactly. Why don't we start off? Maybe if you can just quickly like introduce yourselves. I mean, like, what's your elevator pitch to the world?
We're very we're not a big pitch brand, but I'll say I'm David from DS & Durga. You want to say who you are?
I'm Kavi from DS & Durga. We're co-founders of DS & Durga. I'll say our elevator pitch.
Go for it. Oh, actually, I know the one line that we just figured out, but go ahead.
Okay. We are a Brooklyn perfume brand who makes perfume, who makes perfume based on on myth, music, and the mundane. These are our three big inspirations. David is the perfumer. He's a self-taught perfumer, and I do all the visual creative. And we started this 15 years ago from scratch, not knowing anything about the perfume business, not knowing anything about what we were getting into. And we slowly grew it, slow and steady. And here we are now.
Here we are now. I mean, congratulations on 15 years of business. That is a feat and in and of itself. And just the impact you've been able to make within your respective industries in the community, it's really great to see. And I've been a fan of the brand too. And just seeing it in so many different places, it's very cool to see.
It's funny, the 15 years, and yeah, we do feel proud of it now. A while ago, we did not, because it seemed like there were all of these brands coming out, getting very like Instagram famous, like very quickly. And they would just have all this seeming success so quickly. And we were like, oh, wow. And they're just like 2 years old or like 1 year old. And we're like, we've been at this for years and years. And, you know, but then we realized like we're building, we're in it for the long haul. We're building like a brand with longevity, and like that's quite apparent to us now. And like, we're really happy that we've done it slowly. We haven't made like any decisions that we regret. We've just really, I mean, any big decisions, and we've just like really done it right and intentionally. Mm-hmm. So yeah, the 15 years at this point feels really good that we've like done it so slowly and intentionally.
Well, and there is something to be said about that, because one, just like kind of that myth of overnight success is not a thing. And two, a lot of those companies that really shot up really quickly, a good handful of them are not even around anymore. So I think like, you know, longevity and just doing the work and doing it over time and being consistent with it. I mean, there's so much to be said about just the value of perspective and long-term vision and just hard work in general, you know? And I feel like the dialogue around that conversation, like that conversation is changing too, shifting away from like overnight success and, you know, people who have built up companies in however many, you know, like a year or two or whatever the narrative has been. That is, I feel like, been shifting, at least from my end, in terms of what I'm seeing and being pitched. And the focus is being drawn away from that and more towards people who have just been at it and working hard over the years and just doing the work. So congratulations on 15 years.
Thanks. Yeah, I totally agree with what you said. Yeah.
So you both come from really unconventional backgrounds for the business that you're in, music and architecture. If you had to, like, if we could just start off, if you had to describe the DS & Durga brand as like a song or a building, what would it be? Like, how would you associate the brand through the lens of those two things?
Well, the thing is, we're so, it's our own little art project, right? So we are influenced by other art forms and musicians and architects and that, but like we would never base what we are on like someone else, you know, like to me, like we make like a 360 approach to our fragrances. We make the juice. I do the words. There's like a description and liner mm-hmm. notes about it. Kavi makes, you know, like graphics that go along with it. We have imagery. I have a playlist that I make on Spotify. We have films sometimes. You know, in emails we'll say that these are like the books or the food or the drinks or the places that go with this. So it's like, it's real world building. Mm-hmm. So there are musicians who inspire me so much. I guess I'd say Gustav Mahler, because he's like probably my favorite grand symphonist, you know, but the way he was doing it wasn't necessarily, you know, I don't know if there's an exact analog to how we do it and how he did it, but definitely the records behind me was the beginning of the brand. You have to understand, we didn't know what the word brand meant. We didn't try to like start something. We just started making things and it took off and slowly realized, oh, what I'm talking about in music, I can do in perfume. Kavi, mm-hmm. what she was working on architecture, she could apply to design. And I was looking at these old records and, you know, you read about Mahler and he's just such a giant figure that's known by one name and like changed the world through his music, but really not that many people listen to classical music. So might not even know about this giant. And then on the record, there's liner notes and there's so much about it. And I was like, why is no one doing this with perfume? Like you take the perfume and you take the work seriously and you describe it and get so rich into the story of why you made it. And you know, that's brings people to the depth of what you do.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's so much that, you know, obviously smell and scent can be tied to when it comes to a lot of our formative memories and experiences. What would you say was, you know, looking back, your first formative memory around scent? Like, is there a scent that really kind of opened the world, or is just like a memory for you that has been just like a strong point in time and reference for you?
Mine is that I grew up like right near the ocean, like up the hill from the ocean, and there were woods behind my parents' house. So I could always like smell the ocean in the woods, and those are pretty foundational for me.
What about yourself?
Yeah. I have a couple. They're all based on going to India, like during my like childhood summers. One of them is there's this like local handicraft store, like run by the government in India, so that you can like get different handicrafts from different regions of India in Delhi or in Bombay, wherever you are. And the one in Delhi that we used to go to, you know, at the end of our trip to buy like, you know, souvenirs to go home, had one room that was all carvings of things from sandalwood. And the smell of this room was just insane, intense. And like, you don't really smell this anymore because they're not allowed to use sandalwood in this way. Like, it was just like really like so much sandalwood, just like little elephants, like canes, like large things, like, you know, the replicas of the Taj Mahal, like all carved like intricately from sandalwood. And the smell of this room was just like unbelievable. And so, yeah, I just like remember this smell, and like the smell of sandalwood reminds me of like, you know, this one room in India. It's a really special smell.
Yeah. Formative experiences and memories. You know, you mentioned earlier that, you know, this was something that you, you know, just started as a passion project or as something that was based off of your interest and didn't have experience building. When did that light bulb kind of go off, or when did you realize that this could be something that this was getting momentum and that there was traction and interest?
It was quick. It was really quick because I started making something in December of 2007. And we gave like gifts away to friends. Like we wanted to make like tonics and lotions and like live in the 19th century. And we didn't know like what it was going towards. And then I was like, oh, it's really fragrances. And then Kav was like, oh, I can, she worked at this architecture firm. She's like, I can use the fancy printer and make labels, let's make some perfumes. And I had worked in like restaurants. And so I knew like a lot of like tastemakery people. And we brought it to these three stores, Ernest, Sohn, Freeman's, and Ngabi Trust. And they were like, this is rad. Let's do it. And so already we were selling a perfume in February of 2008, having just made my first one in December of 2007. Wow. And then it took off. There was an article written in the Thrillist. Meanwhile, I'm spending 10,000 hours learning how to make perfume because I'm self-taught and I'm just like, you know, barreling through it. And there's no information on the web of like how to make perfume. I just had to like make one bajillion experiments and write it all down and figure out my own system. And in the beginning, my system was so strange. I can explain later if you're interested. But I figured out how to make perfume. Thrillist wrote about it. And then someone connected us to Anthropology and they were like, we'd love for you to make us a line. And they put in like a PO for a purchase order for like, I need to look back. I always bring this story up and I don't remember. It's either $26,000 or $52,000, which to me was like $26 million or $52 million. We're like, holy shit. And we were in India and I literally just wrote, I was working at a restaurant at the time and I was like, I'm giving my 2 weeks. I was like, we got like this one, you know, not even the money. You just get like the PO that says they have to pay you.
Yeah.
And boom, we quit our job. Yeah. She quit within 1 year, we quit our jobs and did it full time.
And I want, like off of that, like we were just younger and more reckless. I think we were 27 when we met, and I definitely had a career, like a professional career. I like went to grad school for architecture and that's where I was working. And I left my job in 2009 and it was like the recession here in New York. Mm-hmm. And all the buildings that we were working on, like our firm, everything was getting put on hold. So because there was just no funding and everyone was freaking out. And I left my job and people were like, how are you leaving your job? Like, you're lucky to have a job right now. I was like, I don't know. I just like, you know, it was really just like following my heart. I had just met David. We fell in love and we were like, you know, we decided to like make something together. So a lot of it was just that we didn't make this like huge momentous decision. Like, we were like changing careers. We did not think of it like that. We did not know what we were starting. We didn't know we were starting a brand. We didn't know we were starting a company that we would be running in like 15 years. We just were like, you know, doing something fun together.
Yeah. So what was like going through your head and like the emotions that you were feeling when you got that like first purchase order so soon after you
just kind of right now? It's 2010.
It just felt kind of just crazy and weird. We were like, how is this happening? Is this real? Like someone, like we just started making this like small little thing that we were just like selling to friends and stuff. And like at the Brooklyn, like flea market. And then now like a real company like wants it and wants to pay us like real money for it. You know, felt surreal. Yeah.
And did you feel like
definitely like one of the milestones of one of the biggest milestones of our business.
100%. And from an infrastructure standpoint, is that something that you felt like ready to like that kind of at that level?
No, that was amazing. We had
friends were coming over and like helping us fold boxes. So I was, okay, you know, I'm hand making like little amounts of perfumes and like we're selling like small like to these like three stores. And then we get this thing and it's like, I had to buy drums, okay, and like make it. We had an office space in Gowanus in Brooklyn, but I had to like make them all. But how do I fill it? This is just like ridiculous. Like, by the way, you can't work like this. You need to be made in an FDA facility. Like right after that, we learned that we couldn't be making it like that, and then we switched to this guy in the Bronx. But what we're just like kids not understanding it, and so I was like, how can I do this fast? Like. So I had to have a big drum, but how do you pump shit out of a drum? Like you can't just do that. So I was like, you know, got like cups to take it out and put it in those vodka infusers, you know, like they come with like stones and you'd see at like someone's picnic. So like I was filling and it would take so long and then we'd have to label it and then, you know, box it up and we'd have people come over and like help us and like drink beers. It was bananas.
Must feel kind of nostalgic looking back on those days.
At this point, it's interesting. Yeah, because we have always kept our head like a horse, like the thing on the side. We're just like forward what we're doing next. Like we are not resting on our laurels at all. And we still feel like we're nowhere. And like, you know, we have so much more to do. So like we're not looking back. Like I remember we have like an archive of all this stuff and we're like, whatever, like get rid of it, you know. But it's like, no, one day you should like show all of this. So. We definitely have a history. We need to make like a DS and Durga book that shows like the amount of things that we have created ancillary to the product, you know, and things before.
Yeah. And it's meandering because like, you know, because it was so just like authentic and natural and coming from people who like did not set out a business plan, never had like a brand book, didn't know what that meant. I didn't know that I had to like define all these like codes about like the visual language of the brand when we started. So just, it was just kind of like things done on a whim a lot of times. So like in the beginning, everything looked different and we would like switch how things looked, just like turn on a dime. And it's just like a really kind of curvy journey.
I think I found it. This is crazy. I need to tell the story. It's actually 2009. But I thought we would. Let's see. Sorry. Keep going.
Yeah.
What would you say, you know, looking back on those days was like the biggest lesson you learned about, you know, running a small business at that point and kind of, yeah, like, and taking it to that next level?
I don't know if it sounds very original, but perseverance, you know, it definitely wasn't easy. I imagine it's even harder now because the space is so saturated. Every space is so saturated. There's so many brands right now. When we started, it wasn't exactly the case. You know, it wasn't like there were a million niche perfume brands trying to pop up. So I guess we just had to like really, really keep at it. We were coming from outside of a very secretive business, you know, and no one really wants to help you. You're trying to figure out really basic things like, where do I source these perfume oils? Like, you know, and not buying them off the internet. Like, how can we like get connected into this industry? And like, how do we get these like bottled? I mean, the minimums for everything, you know, to get like a decent bottle, you have to buy 10,000 of them. That sounded like impossible for us in the beginning, you know? So we had to like work with whatever we could find, like stock bottles. And those, even if the minimum was 100 pieces at that time, that sounded insane to us too. Yeah. So it was just like really, we had to really be resourceful, you know, and really figure things out. And I think both of us are really good. We're both super scrappy. And I think that is obviously the best quality that you could have when you're starting a business. You know, we just wouldn't give up. We kept trying to figure things out. We would just like ask everyone we knew. Not that really we got much help from anyone. And it wasn't like the atmosphere then either, like 15 years ago, just like helping each other out and community. It wasn't like, that wasn't really in the air, you know, it was more of a like dog eat dog, just kind of like figure it out for yourself kind of world.
There was the feeling of other founders in Brooklyn doing not perfume that we felt like perfume. Part of, like friends who made like clothes and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but in an artistic way, not in a brand with a capital B way.
Well, we didn't know the word brand. We did not use that word. We thought brand meant like Coca-Cola. So we definitely, we definitely never thought of the word brand. I didn't, honestly, did not know what the word marketing meant until 2018. And we took our first investment in 2018. I finally realized like what it meant. And I was like, oh, I'm kind of a marketer at the end of the day. But I did not think like that. So, I mean, I think I'd have a lot of advice to someone if they like came and asked like specific questions, because we went through it. I think perseverance is obviously, you know, one of them. And I mean, being nice is really important. Like, you know, like being like snobby and like thinking you're awesome is not going to get you anywhere. So just be
open. Totally.
As you were, you know, learning more about the business and the industry and opening doors and unpacking kind of what was required to build the business, were there any kind of myths or misconceptions around the industry or around that category that you realized like, oh, this is not actually how it's often perceived as? Like, what are the biggest myths?
Someone just asked me this. It's true. Like, I've never felt like disrespected or not embraced by our industry at all. Like, I know so many perfumers. If anything, it's the brands, because you have to understand, here's the weird thing about the perfume industry, right? I'm sitting in this office. I actually make perfume, right? It just so happens we have a brand that's about the perfumes that I make. Mm-hmm. But most brands don't make perfumes. They go to a perfume company and say, hey, can you make me a perfume that's based on a trip I took with my parents in 1991 to the Bahamas. And maybe that perfumer's never been to the Bahamas. They weren't on that trip. And they have to like craft this like thing together. And like, that's where the lie begins. And then when that brand talks about that perfume, they don't know the formula. They don't know how to make a formula, the magic of the formula. So they have to like go off of, you know, it's like an art historian. Like, would you rather hear from an art historian, or would you rather hear like Picasso talk about what he did, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think, why did I get on this? What was your question?
Just like myths and misconceptions just around that you discovered.
So actually like the brands like that, they might have to be more like cagey and stuff, cause they're not making the actual art that we're all selling. But if you talk to the artists, they're awesome. Like I've never felt like anything. I just felt like embraced by all people, and people are very nice in our industry. So there is that myth about that whole thing. Yeah. I mean, of course things are secretive because they have to be, like in terms of proprietary information and the security of, like, you know, I work at Firmenich, and they're like, you know, number one, number two biggest company in the world that makes fragrances. And yeah, there's like crazy amount of security around, like even like the formulas I make, like literally no one there can see them at all, except for someone who checks regulatory, but like, no, and then the people who, the someone who compounds it, but like there's even the sales people and stuff, they're not allowed to see the formulas. It's very like secure, and it has to be because it's proprietary information.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. You know, as you've built up the company, the industry in general, there's, you know, a lot of big players in the industry. But your trajectory, you know, you've been able to be independent. And so in your experience, has there been a moment where staying independent felt like the harder choice, but the right one ultimately for you as a team and as a brand?
Well, just, we have investors, right? Kavi and I still own a bunch. Yeah. I think like what is independent and what is niche is sort of like, I'm not sure anyone knows anymore. Cause if do we consider Byredo niche, they sold to Puig for $1 billion, you know, and is Le Labo niche? They're owned by Estee Lauder. So we have investors. So I'm not sure if you're not part of a strategic company,
I can talk about though the moment that when we decided to first take on any outside investment, which was in 2018. So that was, it was about 10 years into our business, and we had done it all ourselves till then. It was David, me, and maybe, you know, 2 to 4 other employees at like different times. And we were like, we can keep going like this. Things are good. Sales are good. We feel like we know what we're doing. We can keep mom and popping it, you know, for a long time. But we felt like we had just bigger visions for what DS and Durga could be. Like we knew from the beginning that we were making something that we were filling some void, that we were putting something out there with a unique voice. And we'd always felt good about like what we were putting out was different. Like we'd always gotten that feedback. And we just knew from the beginning that this is something that like, we're not just putting out more of something into the world. Mm. So we decided that, you know, we were just going to go for it. And taking on investment for the first time was really scary for us. I think a lot of people jump on it. And like, we see so many small brands like trying to raise money, like with private equity or even VC. And it's definitely something like when we talk to other people, we're like, wait as long as you can. I mean, it's kind of a common thing to like, wait as long as you can to take on investment. And we did, we waited a good 10 years. And it was scary to do it because it was the first time that we ever, you know, like weren't fully owning the business and giving up even a part of it to someone else, like meant something. But in the end, of course, it was a great decision. I mean, we've been able to grow. We've been able to hire like amazing people that work with us. And like, we've been able to trust them with all the things that they're better doing than we are, you know. And we could not have grown the business to this point had we just like done just David and I and kind of kept that at that very slow pace that we were going, because we wouldn't have the resources, we wouldn't have the talent that we do now. So it was a really good decision to do it. And
yeah, I think back to your misconceptions thing, I think there is a misconception about this like evil world order of strategic companies versus like heroic knights in shining armor in independent companies. And it's not really so cut and dry in that way. No strategic company would spend $100 million on a brand and then change the formulas. Like, of course, right. They're like, they're trying to like take that sauce and make it commercially successful. I mean, for us, there just gets to a point where like Kavi and I aren't business people, right? So like we need people who are partners who know basic business and great strategic business in order to help us get our message out into the world. I honestly think that there's like a altruistic part of business, like, you know, in a capitalist economy, the businesses create like support networks for a giant amount of people. And there's a lot of people who live off of what we do, like them and their family and stuff. And you can argue about like what's good and who has what and stuff, but it's the foundation of it. And I just ripping on anything and being negative when you don't think it all the way through to me is, you know, very indicative of our age. And I feel much more positive about it. And I think that in our industry, there's much more good than bad. You're trying to like do something cool and get it out there. Like, yeah, there's jerks in every industry, right? And there's people who are like only in it for the money in every industry, but it hasn't been my experience that's what it's all about. I mean, our investors are awesome. And I've met many people from strategic brands too. I just think that there comes to a level, like when you get to a certain height, in order to take it to the next thing, you need someone who has experience in operating and managing that.
Yeah.
One more thing I'll say about like thinking negative about like a business. It's a fucking miracle if you have any success in business at all. And if you are a customer or a client of something and like a product made by something, it's a gift that thing exists, because think of your favorite restaurant. That shit's closing in 10 years. You know, like it is so difficult to make it in any industry. And like the thing that you love, it might be discontinued. It might be changed. The company might fold and go under. And I wish we spent more time like enjoying what was there, because things change at a moment and it's not going to be around forever. You know, like ripping on stuff is just kind of lame.
Yeah. No, definitely. When you were talking to your investors, was there any, you know, piece of advice that you received from an investor or a mentor, that made you kind of pause and, or maybe opened up your perceptions about what could be possible with the business that you maybe hadn't considered before that?
Well, again, these people, like, we didn't, Kavi and I didn't take a salary. We didn't know what marketing meant. We didn't, like, we didn't have a president. We had no structure to our organization. So, like, we literally didn't know the fundamentals of operating a business. So that was taught by Oliver from Monogram, was our first investor, and he really walked us through and got us the talent. So it's all about the people around you, right? Like, that's really how you're going to build a business. Yeah. And he brought in our president, Donna DiDonato, who had done this before and just knew so much. And she has been instrumental into making DS and Durga into a viable commercial business. I've learned so much from her, Oliver, Manzanita now. And then in terms of, like, the actual, like, raising of capital, you know, that's where a investment banker comes in and really helps walk you through, like, how these things work, and a lawyer. So we've had the best partners in lawyer banking, our team and our investors. And I've learned so much, like, so much about business that I had no idea before. Those are all at different stages, I think, you know, and hopefully. Oh, you know, another thing about the capitalism, just like the evil of business versus, like, its function. I think about this in terms of, like, the record industry has always been, like, thought of as pretty evil and, like, taking all the money from the artist. It might be, like, it looks kind of bad. But then if you look at a business, like, you make a thing of, like, art, and let's say you make a perfume, right? And you don't know, like, how to sell it or where to sell it or how to do it. The person who comes in and, like, tells you that and gets it done and gets it sold to make you money, like, that's worth a lot. You know, that's what a true partnership is. Like, you need business people and you need artists. Like, the business person should definitely not get all the money, but the artist can't also have all the money unless they know how to do the business themselves. But you need to pay people for what they are part of it. And it should hopefully be a good partnership that's fair to all people. I think people get really rubbed the wrong way, you know, when you're offered money and you look at it and you're like, wait, but you're making this, but you're making that. You have to know, like, it's better to make a small piece of a big pie than a big piece of a small pie, right? And so if you're aligned on where you're going, you have to let the ego get out of the way. Like, you can't, unless you are an awesome businessman, you know, like, you hear about it in rap all the time, like, talking about this, you know, like, there's you can be good at business, but I'm pretty sure that people who know how to run a business are worth their weight in gold too. You know, I'm always so impressed by finance people, because I'm not one, you know, like, I meet someone and they want to talk to me about all these, like, creative ideas. I'm like, I don't need more of that. I'm interested in, like, how you think about finance, because I need someone to explain that shit to me.
Yeah. And one thing you have to do, like, for anyone, you know, at the start of, like, of raising capital or for their business, really, it seems obvious, you really have to make sure that they're aligned with what you want to do creatively, because, you know, they don't always line up, like a brand's, like, creative vision and then making money, you know? So, yep. I mean, we've been really careful to partner with people who want to protect our creative vision, see the value in it, and, you know, really want to help support it, even if it means, like, not doing this cash grab thing or this, you know, this collaboration or kind of, like, selling out or diluting the brand in ways that would make it more mainstream. So I think, you know, you just have to really make sure that you're, you know, it is a marriage, and you have to just make sure that you're on the same page about, like, a lot of, like, big decisions that will come down the road.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
It's a marriage where they're paying for the house and you're, like, the best decorator ever. So they need to be like, you're so good at decorating. You're like, I'm really worth it because my decoration's awesome. But you have to know that, like, they bought the house. You know,
a partnership, a true partnership. Yeah.
Yes.
Switching gears, you know, so many of your scents, all of your scents read very much in, you know, the way that you describe them as, like, almost like short stories. There's a lot of storytelling around it. You know, the scent of a cowboy on the trail, or the plants that grow through the, you know, through Brooklyn's pavements. What kind of stories are you attracted to when you're building out a new scent?
I mean, I'm so inspired by, like, everything all around me all day. And I'm thinking of things that, you know, I just told this one when I came up to Toronto, like, I was listening to a Charlemagne book, a book about Charlemagne on the drive up there. And they started talking about how he brought in 800, the two kids with him to be crowned Holy Roman Emperor. And they, you know, they're like saying like the air was redolent of incense, and like this giant moment was happening where like, you know, Western Roman Empire had fallen, and he was the first one to like sort of try to bring it back to like this thing. So I was thinking, oh, what would it have smelled like in there? Like the two kids are sitting there, they're watching their dad like be crowned. And I've been there. So that's another thing. I've been to it's in St. Peter's Cathedral, and you can see the spot. Remember we took that picture of like the kids like putting a hat. Yeah. So I've been there, so I can see like the marble. I mean, I'm sure it didn't look the same back then, and just right. What it must have smelled like with the incense and like just dirty 8th, 9th century people, and you know what their clothes are made of. And I made a formula today, and I sent it off. Let's see if I'm right, or if it's cool, or if it's a thing. You know, like then I can make a scent that's about smells like, you know, St. Peter's 9th century or Charlemagne's kids. And that's just one thing. I'm just always thinking of stuff, and I have a million things here. You know.
Yeah, so, very referential.
You know, there's like a lot of stuff I'm working on right there. You know, and there's more behind me over there. So inspiration to me comes from anything. I think I'm interested in, I don't know how to describe it, but like I'll read something and something just shines to me. Like I heard that whole book, that was probably in the second chapter. Nothing before was I like, I need to make this into a fragrance, but that I was like, oh, very specific scene. I like very specific detailed things. I've always been, you know, I love the idea of how a short story can be as deep as a long story, because you can imply so much. And then if you distill that down, I'd say poetry is even more powerful to me, and like I might even prefer it because my mind thinks more poetically than like linear text. And a poem can just express the same amount of like large narrative as a gigantic novel, and you could read it in, you know, you can read someone's whole poetry collection in like a week or like a night, you know, depending on what it is. So,
and it can mean a different thing at different times when you're reading it too,
you know? Right.
Is there a scent that you wanted to create but maybe held back because maybe it was too polarizing or too weird? Like what's the difference between what makes it through and what doesn't?
Anything that's weird to me, I'm going to try to make. I'll never put out something that's unwearable. I try to make it like, so like I've been working on a weird one for a while. So I just went to Iceland and was reading the Eddas and just was imagining these like salmon fishermen, farmer people like on the, and I just started like trying to make it. It stinks right now, but I'll just keep trying to make it more and more wearable, and maybe it'll never happen. But so I always just try to bring something back to wearability. It's like bringing it more and more into focus, because a perfume has to last. It has to like have sillage. It has to be symphonic. It has to be memorable and wearable. So there's more that I've come up with that haven't come out than have come out, of course, just by the law of mathematics.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. I mean, you know, fragrance is such a sensory medium, but in an increasingly digital world, how do you get people to connect to your scents and your brand ultimately without them being able to smell it at first?
We've always had this thing. I mean, in the beginning, we were always selling well online because we're showing a 360 approach. I think I already said, right? We have the scent, we have the description and the words, we have the playlist that you can listen to. There's imagery. And so it really shows you the world. And so it's always done really well. I mean, I sort of believe, like, I don't know how to say it, but like, trust the artist. Like if you're looking at it and you love it because like the whole world that's being built, and then you get it and you're like, I'm not sure I like this, like wear it a little bit, because you know, you might not like it and then you can just move on and get something else. But I love the idea that, you know, your favorite band, you hear their new record and you're like, oh, it doesn't sound like the band. Like what happened? They changed. They're doing this whole thing. And then you listen to it, and the third time you hear it, you're like, actually, I kind of like that song. It's good. A week later, you've listened to it six times and you're like, this sounds just like the band that I always loved. They just went in this direction and they did this. And then next year, another one, that album just sounds like a continuation of the thread of the band. So I think if you love the artist, unless you think it's just like a cash grab, like stupid business, then sure. But in artistic perfumery or music or painting, like there's a reason that someone put it out, and to try to check it out seems
And you know, one of the things that I noticed immediately about your brand before being able to smell it too is just like the packaging, the branding, the bottle design and everything. Kavi, like with your background in design and architecture, like what kind of perspective, especially in the earlier days, did you want to imbue as a team on how the brand was presented outside of the scent?
Oh, what our team, like?
Yeah, like what did you want to convey that, you know, if someone wasn't smelling the scents through, you know, what about your brand did you want to convey through the branding, the packaging, the bottle design?
Yeah. So what we've kept the package and the bottle like really kind of minimal and I guess timeless is the word, because like we knew it wasn't, this is like the way I always think of it. Like, I don't want to get sick of it, you know, like, because I do get tired of things like really quickly. Like, I just always want to move on to something else. I have a better idea. You know, I think like this could be a better representation for the brand. So, you know, but once you go with some kind of like wild or really expressive decision like that, you know, it's kind of, you might get tired of it and you might be like, oh, I don't feel like that anymore. You know, it's like the same reason you don't really want to dress in a trend. Like, you might look back on it in a few years and be like, what was I thinking? Mm. So for that reason, we've kept things really kind of just like elegant and timeless looking. And then we've kind of like let our creative yayas out in like all the other ways, like in the photography in the campaigns that we do to go with each scent, in the graphics on the candles, which are like, you know, it's not our, we've kind of like protected the perfume, the Eau de Parfum product the most, and just like kept it a bit on a pedestal for us in terms of how it looks. And then also in terms of what we will do with it, like for the candles, we'll scent, you know, a hand lotion with it, but like, and we had scented, you know, car fragrance, auto fragrances. We have things called auto fragrances that, you know, are meant to scent your car, or your closet. And we've used the candle fragrances for those, but we've protected the perfume product. And so we keep that really simple and elegant. And then we, you know, kind of go wild in all these other ways.
Right. That's the foundation that is set throughout the brand. And then you get to play with some of the other things.
Exactly. Yeah. Play is the word.
You know, the brand is also, we talked about Anthropologie, but then you've also worked with or had done some incredible collaborations with like Duran Duran, for example. Very different types of collaborations. So what dictates what kind of partnerships and collaborations that you decide to take on and what's right for you as a brand?
I think there's three. In the beginning, some of them helped us. So like Anthropologie, then we made Linda Rodin's perfume. That helped fund our early stage because we could have like a big amount while we did other stuff. And so that right then, that helped us never take investment because that's 5 years because we made three things for Linda and we made two lines for Anthropologie. Maybe 5 or 6 years, it really helped us. So that's one. We wouldn't do a collaboration for money anymore because it's way better for us to just get to sell our own product. But number two would be brand building. Like, it definitely makes sense to get more eyes on the brand. And then number three, and this is like more my thing, but like just whatever's so surprising and weird and artistically awesome. Like, cause we get an email, you know, on average daily, like, we'd want to work with you on something. And like, you know, one came through last year is like, I'm a marine biologist. And like, you know, this guy is using like AI to figure out that whales can speak to each other. And I was like, yes, this is something we want to do. So like, I went to Harvard and like looked at everything like in the lab and we talked and smelled stuff. And I made a fragrance that smells like swimming with whales called Let's Dive. And like some of the money went towards, you know, they're a nonprofit. So it was a win-win. But like when you're telling press, like, yeah, we're collaborating with a marine biologist who's, you know, figuring out that whales speak to each other, that's worth it to me. Like, that's something that's so odd and strange. Yeah. So just, we try to pick the ones that really make sense because we would love to collab with more people. And, you know, if we could do private label, we would, but we don't have time for me to like make something for someone that doesn't have our name on it, you know?
What do you do if you like catch a cold and like your nose is like compromised?
I can't work for that. Yeah. So if I have like a cold, there are days where I just can't, I wouldn't trust my nose. Uh-huh. It's rare that I can't smell that much. I did when I got COVID, I lost scent for 2 days. Wow. And it's so funny. I would say you can make an argument before then that like, oh yeah, like Diaz and Durga, does well, like because of like the marketing and because of the packaging, you, like who knew if it was the fragrances. But after I lost my sense of smell, I was like, oh dude, fragrance is everything. Because if I couldn't confidently talk to a tea about every detail of what's going on in the fragrance, I'd have no confidence in the brand. It'd be all lies. I'd be like, yeah, this it's jasmine. It's like using the best jasmine from like the South of France. And like, I went to the South of France and it was incredible. It's like, I can really talk about it cause I can really smell it. Mm. So I learned that. Yeah. When I have a cold, I can't really work those couple days, but I'm not hand making everything in this office anyway. I'm doing so much of it on the computer and I can just, the samples will come back to me and I can wait until I can smell again perfectly.
Yeah. Yeah. Just a random aside thought that I had. Yeah. So just back to the marine biologist. I mean, like that is just so interesting because it is like weird and unique and has a distinct point of view, but then also kind of goes back to just this element of like storytelling and world building. And that is mm-hmm. kind of that, you know, universe building. Right. And I think that is so interesting and just kind of continues to reinforce point of view as a brand as well. Just as we kind of wrap up here, what do you think from both your perspectives is kind of just the most interesting thing that's happening in the world of fragrance or let's say luxury in general?
Fragrance, Diaz and Durga, luxury, Diaz and Durga.
Sorry?
Fragrance, Diaz and Durga, and luxury, Diaz and Durga. I'm just kidding. You said
let me think.
We're not like, I'd say we don't, we're not like all... So much of my influence, almost none of my influence comes from perfumery or perfume of today or like, yeah.
I'll say, I think, and I said this on that panel, I do think social media and TikTok specifically, even though we're not really involved in it and have like a long way to go in that. I just like generally think it's really cool that you can get feedback from your audience so quickly mm-hmm. and have dialogue with them in such a direct way. And you know, we are, we really use that. Like the example I gave was that we make these studio juices a few times a year and it's just like a really great way to be nimble and make something, you know, fun and not really that is like kind of market research at all and just make something that is, creatively satisfying for both of us as, and for the brand. And we are able to get this feedback from it really quickly. And, it just engages our audience in this discussion that, we all like really enjoy. And I think it's so cool that, you know, you can build this relationship directly with people who are who are you know, purchasing the fragrances and like knowing what they think about it. And it allows us to, you know, it does inform, you know, definitely many decisions that we make and just like how we present ourselves and different, what kind of fragrances really resonate with people. So yeah, that dialogue with people on social media, I think we're really starting to embrace it. We're a little late to the game. I mean, we've always like seen it as valuable, but I think we're starting to use it a lot more than we used to.
And this, the word I think you're using is like community, like the fragrance community is so awesome. And that's the coolest part of the industry is that,
very there's passionate. All these
people out there who are passionate about
they
it.
They are.
Who, like I, in the beginning when it was just, I remember saying the two things I want is to move perfume more towards the arts and more towards the masses. And those two things have happened, you know, like I people are really excited and see perfume for the art form it is and the creative expression as part of their everyday life. And that's exciting. So yeah, the enthusiasts is definitely exciting.
I love that. Thank you so much for both of your time. I loved learning more about your world and your journey and your perspective. I'm a fan of the brand and I think it's just such a, I think just like your point of view and your perspective on the brand has been, you know, because it is such a noisy world out there. And so it's harder for people to, for their voice to be heard. And I think that your voice is definitely heard, and it's the point of view is so interesting and fantastic. And I'm looking forward to seeing more interesting, weird collaborations come out down the road.
Thanks. Thank you, Lance. It was so nice to talk to you. And the questions were so nice and thoughtful. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
That's a wrap on this episode of Mission Critical. If today's conversation gave you something to think about, do me a favor. Subscribe, leave a review, and share it with someone who needs to hear it. Big ideas are meant to be shared, and the best insights only matter if they're put into action. Until next time, stay sharp, stay curious, and go and make something happen. I'm Lance Chung, and this is Mission Critical.